Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
IQ presented by RotoWire. Here to talk UFC Beijing. Our main event is Curtis Blaydes versus Francis Ngannou 2, the rematch. Co-main event is, well, I guess you could call it a co-main event because technically it's Alistair Overeem taking on Sergey Pavlovich, whose name I almost butchered, but I reined that back in.
Very good.
As I mentioned, this card is from Beijing. Lineup block, Saturday morning, 3:15 a.m. We record this Friday nights around 8 o'clock. So quick turnaround. Make sure you have your lineup set before you go to bed. Maybe have an alarm set if you have a lot of money going in. Make sure no fights were canceled. Haven't heard anything yet. So we're going to go relatively quick because there are some fights that don't warrant a lot of talking about. I, by the way, am your host of Fight IQ, the Daily Fantasy Sniper. Joined as always by the analysts, Chris Olsen and Sun Tzu. Guys, how you doing?
Yo, so let's give a cautionary tale here. A good friend of ours on one of these early morning cards decided to get up and set his lineups. Hashtag dead money. He overslept. He slept through his alarm and all his games that he reserved ended up being dead. So what I recommend is that you set, if you are going to get some sleep before this card, set your lineups. Make sure all your contests are reserved. Set your lineups before you go to sleep. That's all I have to say.
Chris, how are you?
I am doing good. I will not have that problem because I am just staying up all the way through.
Me too.
I think that should be a fun time for me. We'll see how I feel by the main event. But I will say that the pricing, and I put this on Twitter as well, I think the pricing in this card is profoundly weird. I think they didn't really know a lot of the times where to put their 9K fighters, so they just put them wherever. And I think that's going to make for pretty interesting.
I don't think that was the issue. I think they DraftKings does what DraftKings does. They go right by the odds, but they go by money line odds.
No, that's true. It's true, but
all the women's fighters up there.
Yeah, no, it's true, but you know, sometimes they'll deviate from the odds a little bit. But
that's true.
In any event, I think it's going to make for some potentially good value spots, and for a lot of weird randomness. So be prepared for it. But we're here to talk you through it, and let's get started. I'm excited.
All right. Well, before we do that, want to, as always, thank RotoWire for having us. Make sure you're going to rotowire.com/free. 10-day free trial to all their usually paid content. No credit card required. Season-long, daily fantasy, MMA, obviously, NBA, NFL, all the good stuff. Daily, season-long optimizers. Make sure and check them out over at RotoWire. Make sure you like this video. Subscribe. Also subscribe to the iTunes iTunes feed, which I won't pump up as much this week because it's a real quick turnaround. But if you are listening to us on iTunes, just because we're hilarious and there's usually a good fight or two, thank you. And make sure you subscribe. And if you're just on YouTube, jump over, subscribe. As always, follow all of us on Twitter. I'm at the DFS Sniper 1S. Chris is at Real Chris Olsen. Joe is at Sun Tzu, S-U-N-T-S-Z-U. Let's do it. First fight of the night. Luis Smolka, he is back. Second stint in the UFC, he's back. He's on a 3-fight win streak after a 4-fight losing streak in the UFC. Those three fights, as these guys are going to tell you, he beat up a bunch of cans. But besides that, he is on a 3-fight win streak. He is 8,800, taking on the UFC debutant. He is so bad, he only has one name, but he's got it twice. Sue Mudarji.
There you go.
He is 7,400. The line, Smolka minus 175. Come back on Sue Mudarji plus 165. God help me. I'm back in the Luis Smolka camp, although it is not very convincingly. They're both not good. I think ultimately Smolka is going to have enough grappling and be good enough in the scrambles to get this done here. But tread lightly for me, the guy on a 4-fight UFC losing streak. That being said, he's my pick here. Well, let's talk to the analyst this week. Let's start with, I want to make sure Joe goes first in the first women's fight. That's how I'm going to do this. So, Joe, you're up first this week.
Okay. So, there's a lot of narrative here, right? I mean, Smoka's problems, aside from his wins and losses in the UFC, are pretty well publicized. He had a pretty serious problem with alcohol. Apparently, he has straightened that out and is now sober. He is also making, I believe, his UFC debut at bantamweight. There is no 120. Well, the rumor is there's no 125 division. So he's always been a pretty tall and long bantamweight. I think this would have been a natural move for him anyway at some point. Look, I mean, he's got an excellent ground game. He's one of those guys that has great jiu-jitsu without having good wrestling. So he's not a power. He's not going to run out and try to slam you down and, you know, advance. I mean, he is a pretty much a pure jiu-jitsu guy. He's a decent striker. He doesn't have a lot of power. You know, the guy with two names, I don't know a lot about him. You know, I'm going to pick Smokey here. I think this is an interesting fight to target. I'll have some shares of the other guy just because, you know, I really want to see Smoka, you know, up at the major leagues for a fight. But if he's got his act together, you know, this is a guy that, you know, headlined an event several years ago and, you know, was a hardcore prospect. So if he's got his act together, I think his game is good enough to beat this debuting Chinese fighter. So Luis Smoka is my pick. I think it's an interesting fight to target. 8.8K is probably about right. Good inside the distance prop. So I would definitely target this fight.
Chris, tell us more about Sue Mudarji.
I would love to tell you. I think first, before I do that, I want to just double back on the alcohol problems that Smokey was having. I don't know this for a fact, but I kind of think that they were just like, okay, go away for a while, straighten yourself out, and we'll have you back. What I mean to say is that I'm not sure it has anything to do with the current win streak he's on, because as Sean alluded to, if you look at it, I mean, he fought a debuting fighter in one of them. One guy had six professional fights at the time they fought. So I don't know how beneficial it was to his career.
I think Joe's point was that it's more that the alcohol is affecting his previous performances.
Yes.
Not that getting clean helped him beat these scrubs. I think it was just
No. I know.
Staying active. I know. Exactly. I don't know if he's going to beat. By the way, the guys he lost to, Moreno, okay, that's not a good loss. But Ray Borg, Tim Elliott's a weird guy, and Mateus Nicolau. Those aren't no names here.
Those are pretty solid guys. Better than anyone this Chinese fighter has fought.
Right. Sorry, Chris. Just
no, no, no. I know your point's taken. My only point was that you know, it's not as though you shouldn't be looking at the fact that he's getting these wins and thinking that he might be, you know, a massively improved fighter or something. Was my only point.
No.
I just think that Smoka, like, I mean, his striking is okay. He doesn't move his head. He doesn't have great striking defense. As Joe said, he's good in scrambles, good jiu-jitsu guy. But when he can be out-scrambled, he can be beaten that way too. So the Tim Elliott fight, other fights. So about his opponent here, Sumarjadin? Sumarjadin? Is that it?
Sumudarjin,
okay. He reminds me of the guy Peter Yan fought in his debut, Jinsu San. He likes to pressure and dart in and out with hard strikes until he has you hurt and then swarm on you. He's good at he's very defensively responsible. He's got good wrestling defense, and he's good at striking backing up. So I think he's got a lot of tools. The one thing I would say is that he's not really a combination puncher. And that's usually how you hurt Luis Smoka. If you looked at the Nicolau fight, it wasn't the first one. It was the second one, because Smoka would bring his hands up and just get wrecked by that hook every time coming around the guard. But, you know, it's really tough for me to trust Smoka in a spot like this. I would feel a lot better if he had a reliable way of bringing the fight to the ground. But as Joe mentioned, he didn't. And his opponent is going to dart in and out. He's going to hit hard. So I don't know. I may be dogger passing this just because I'm not sure I can rely on Smoko to get the points he needs to convert that salary.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of fades in that high range. I think Smoko, you're going to be forced onto a little bit, at least in GPPs. I could see dogger pass and cash if you don't trust Smoko. All right, let's move on. Kevin Holland, 9,500, taking on the white Mike Tyson. John Phillips at 6,700. Line on this fight, as you would expect, Kevin Holland, the massive favorite, -560. Comeback on John Phillips is +475. Huge price tag, as that would indicate. By the way, I usually mention this, as I did mention, we record these Friday nights around 8 o'clock. If you're watching this now, we got about 25 people watching live. I want to grow that number, obviously. But if you are here now, ask us questions. I'll filter them out through these guys. It's part of the fun of this. We're right now still discussing how everyone's going to watch this card. It looks like most people are powering through. I'm on the opposite side, by the way. Another strategy: I'm playing light. I'm going to sleep through lock. I'm going to set my lineups before I go to bed. And if I get burned, I get burned. So I'm not playing a ton of money. But I'm going to wake up, and I'm going to try my damnedest to avoid spoilers. So let's see how that goes. That's another route. But if you do that, make sure you play light. Now, white Mike Tyson and Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland coming off of that really fun performance against Thiago Santos. I think it's funny when you can take an ass-whooping and talk shit. Really hilarious. Showed toughness, showed a little bit of ground skills. You know, he was dominated. He showed toughness and that unconventional striking style. I like Kevin Holland. John Phillips, by the way, scored 0 points in his UFC debut for DK. That's right, 0 points. He was taken down immediately by Charles Byrd and submitted. He is the white Mike Tyson, also known as the Welsh Wrecking Machine, says on DraftKings. He is going to try and knock you out. He's got no ground game. Holland has a little bit of a ground game and is more polished on the feet. While Phillips has a puncher's chance, I think that's about it. Give me Kevin Holland, especially when I don't need a ton of these female fighters we're going to talk about later. So for me, Kevin Holland is the pick. Chris, start us off.
Yeah, I would agree that Holland's the pick. I mean, Holland is, I guess, the more polished striker, but only because he's going against a not polished striker. I think Holland is very – the thing about Holland is he doesn't use his reach very well. And so he relies on a lot of, like, left hook counters that are wide, and a lot of his kicking game, which is fine. But the thing about John Phillips is he's going to be trying to get right in the pocket and throw bombs. And Holland's fight on the Tuesday Night Contender Series was against a guy of a very similar stature, a short guy with a big overhand right, and he got clipped more than once by it. So if he gets clipped again here, I don't think John Phillips needs too many of those. I would feel a lot better if I knew that Holland, like he did in his Bellator fight, was just singularly focused on getting takedowns and getting submissions. I mean, it sounds weird to say because he's got the reach advantage and he is the better striker, but I really don't want him standing too much with John Phillips because I think John Phillips could take his head off. And for that reason, I'm going to have both sides of this fight, especially with the low, with such a low price on John Phillips. I think he's a pretty good GPP target because, you know, the ceiling is just, infinity. It's like it's 90, 95 plus. So, Holland's the pick to win. But, if he stands for too long, Phillips can knock him out. And so, again, I say both sides, more Holland, but both sides of this fight.
Joe?
Okay, so not that it's a great gym to begin with, but Phillips did not do this camp at SBG. He did his camp somewhere in Wales, likely at a local gym. He has enough cardio for a few minutes. Yes, he's got a puncher's chance. Yes, I might have him in one lineup or two. Yes, I like Kevin Holland to win here. Should be a good target. Again, if he doesn't get it done in the first round, though, he might be hard-pressed to earn his salary. But I'm picking Holland.
Yeah, I think it's exactly right. I'll have a couple shots on John Phillips, but I don't think I'll be going crazy. All right, next up, first women's fight of the night, Yan Zhao Nan, 9,400, taking on Ciori Kondo at 6,800. Zhao Nan is minus 395. The comeback on Kondo is plus 350. To me, Zhao Nan is by far the better fighter, but she doesn't score exceptionally high. 66 points in her win over Vivian Pereira, 78 in a win over Kaylin Curran. Better on the feet, has not landed a takedown in the UFC. Ciori Kondo had a decision win against Jian, where she didn't get a takedown, 135 significant strikes. They just stood and traded. And her last time out, she was knocked out by Pollyanna Botello by body kicks, I believe. Look, ultimately, I just think that Zhao Nan's going to win, and she's not going to push the pace like Jian and get hit. She's more likely to circle off and be more technical and get a three-round decision and get Kondo chasing. I don't think the points are going to explode like they did in the Kondo-Jian fight. 9,400 is even tough for me in cash unless you see a finish. So for me, this is a better fight to bet than to play on DraftKings. I like Zhao Nan to get a pretty comfortable 30-27 win in what I think is going to be an MMA boxing match. Joe?
By the way, those 135 quote-unquote significant strikes we count that there were a lot of air strikes. That is indicative of how truly messed up Fight Metrics is. And I could go on my Fight Metrics rant. They completely misscored the entire card in Argentina. They were horrible, awful. Anyway, no way she landed 135 significant strikes. The other opponent would have been battered and bloody. I had way too much Kondo last time out. She got done in by a liver kick, and Paulina finished her. I'm with you. This is a fight to fade. Although, if you know, Fight Metrics gives credit for air strikes, you know, Kondo could be an interesting play in cash and maybe even GPPs at her price. I don't know. I mean, I'll pick the Chinese fighter to win here, but this would be a GPP fade and would only be a play in cash if I was going to take the dog. And there is one fight where I like a female fighter a lot more as an underdog, so I will probably have minimal exposure.
We're going to get to that because I disagree pretty hard on that one. I messaged Joe separately saying, hey, of all these women's fights, is there a dog you really like? And he gave me a name, and I replied back with the vomit emoji. And we haven't talked about it yet since. Not where I was expecting you to go, but we'll get there for now. First, let's get your thoughts on Zhao Nan and Kondo.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you guys said. Yan is clearly the better striker, clearly the better command of distance. But, you know, Kondo is just going to come forward and throw strikes, you know. So for 6,900, is it 6,800?
68, I think.
6,800. I think that, you know, in a couple lineups where, you know, whatever you want to call the airstrikes, whatever, I didn't go back and watch it. I didn't watch it intently to see if they were actually landing, but I know that, I mean, that's how she fights. And for 6,800, if she can pull off a win just by volume, which I don't think is impossible, I think that, especially in lower level fights, volume and pressure wins fights. Yep. So if she can control the fight for three rounds or two rounds, that could be enough. But this is ultimately one of a few dogger passes for me on this card.
I was just replying in chat. Somebody missed a breakdown of the Smolka fight, which, by the way, if you're joining this late, Smolka, don't go crazy. Maybe not in cash. Definitely a GPP play as he's coming back against a newcomer. All right, Lou Pinguan? Yeah, close enough. 8,900. Taking on Martin Day, the UFC newcomer, at 7,300. The line is all messed up for this fight. There it is. -185 for Lou Day, +170. Martin Day is not that impressive to me in what I've seen of him. I don't think he's a great prospect at all. Whereas Lou Pinguan, you know, won a 3-round decision against Damian Stasiak last time out, where he scored 56 points. This fight really doesn't interest me that much. I actually think for the price, I might like Day a little more, just be live to a knockout, because I don't think Pinguan is any good. So this to me is a lot of what I don't like about these type of cards. I don't think this is a good fight. I think it's two guys who are just kind of being thrown in there. There are some other fights that I get you need these fight pass cards and you're going to get some funky matchups. This is the one to me that of the whole card makes the least amount of sense. So give me Martin Day and GPPs and Pinguan to 8,900. I have a hard time paying up for. Chris?
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree a little bit. I actually was pleasantly surprised. I liked a lot of what I saw from Martin Day in his
I'm still playing more of him
I'm just saying I think rather than being like okay I guess for the money kind of play, for me he's like okay I actually like what I see kind of play. I think he's a really good combination puncher boxer. He works the body head. He's good defensively. He seems to have a little bit of power. The only thing that I would say that I don't really like is he doesn't seem to have a lot of takedown defense. And we didn't see Pinguan shoot for many takedowns in his first fight, but I think it is there. And he's very scrambly, and he appears to be good off his back. We saw him hunting for submissions off his back there against Stasiak. So the lack of takedown defense does worry me if Pinguan goes for it, but otherwise, I think Day looks like a pretty educated striker to me, and he looks like a pretty good boxer, and he looks like his volume is decent enough. So yeah, he's gonna be a dog that I target pretty heavily at 7,400.
Joe, how about for you?
I first of all, I thought Stasiak won the fight, the last fight against Lee against Ping. So I thought he looked okay in that fight. Not that Stasiak has any great guns. I did have Stasiak as the winner of that fight. Day is a Taekwondo fighter, trains at that same camp in Hawaii with Louis Smolka. You know, in a quest for the rare underdog in this card, I am also going to have some shares of Day. I will probably be very, very underexposed to the favorite, and I will have more shares of Day. I will go out and pick Day to win here.
All right, next up, we have another female fight, and it's the one we're going to have a little bit of disagreement on. Wei Li Zhang, 9,300, taking on Jessica, the ageless one, Aguilar, at 6,900. Zhang is the favorite at -525. Aguilar is the dog, +450. This fight is -270 to go to a decision. So I will say Aguilar is live for that cash punt that everyone's going to be looking for. I think a lot of people are going to end up in that range of Aguilar and Kondo and just kind of punt the spot away and try and get some points there. I will say Aguilar is going to look for takedowns. That's what she does. She is very old school. She's been around forever. She really looks for these body lock takedowns, though. Last time out, she did get a win. She beat Jodi Escobedo on the feet. I think Weili Zhang is a better striker than Jodi Escobedo. She beat Danielle Taylor last time out, which I think is a pretty good win. It's very hard to look good against. Landed almost 80 strikes, got a takedown in an advance. I like Weili Zhang, but it's the same problem as Yan Xiaonan. How much do you really want for a price tag to get a GPP win? I think she's probably more live in cash to me than Xiaonan, but I'm not sure I'm going there in either of these places at this price range. So I like Weili Zhang. I'll let Joe tell you why he has a little bit of interest. I won't pin him into a corner, although, no, you know what? If it was Chris, I would totally pin him into a corner. So, I'm going to be fair here, Chris. Joe, tell us why you love Jessica Aguilar tomorrow.
Well, one is I'm not convinced that she's done. Trains at ATT, top straw weight, looked good on the scales. I was not super impressed with the win against Taylor. Taylor actually got inside and staggered her a couple of times. If you rewatch that fight, you will see she got hit by Taylor. Taylor does not have a lot of pop in her punches. You know, she's a stick and move kind of fighter, and she marked her up a little bit. I think that Aguilar definitely has the wrestling advantage, can take this fight down. Her advances and her jiu-jitsu has not seemed to be that great of late. I don't know how much she could hold her down, but I like her at 6.9K in cash and GPPs. This is a dog or pass play for me. I will have essentially zero of the favorite here and will probably be over market on Aguilar.
Yeah, I will say just because we joke about it every week, he knows his women's MMA. I am now not fading Jessica Aguilar. Also because I need somebody at 6,900. I need somebody in the price range, so why not? I do like the grappling upside. I did say that. So, Chris, how about for you?
Yeah, Weili Zhang is a weird kind of fighter. Like, on her regional tape, I picked Danielle Taylor to win that fight, and my hot take was that Danielle Taylor was going to knock her out. And the reason was that if you watch her in the regional tape, she was very just – wild and chin up in the air and striking. She toned that down a little bit. She was a little more patient in that fight than I expected, and I think that's because a lot of these Chinese fighters are coming through Jackson Wink, and if there's one thing they know, it's how to breed the aggressiveness out of your fighter. Sometimes that works, sometimes that works well. In her case, it was a good change. Sometimes it doesn't, but in either case, she still tends to strike wildly when she gets in exchanges. I mean, that's when Danielle Taylor was able to mark her up, was when she would throw the jab and it would open her up to striking wildly, and then Taylor would just pop in the second leg there. So I think that this fight's really going to depend on me, because I expect Aguilar to be able to land on her on the feet. This fight's really going to depend on who's stronger, because a lot of Weili Zhang's regional finishes are like, she's just stronger in the clinch and she gets her fighter down and is able to win that way. So it's really going to depend on who's stronger. I'm going to say that Jessica Aguilar's got that wrestler strength, and I actually like her to get this done here. And I'm going to have quite a bit of her at 6,900 again.
Well, we're all in agreement on Jessica Aguilar in 2018. That can't be good.
That's shocking.
Yeah, here we go. But the fight that I'm excited for this fight. I actually am. It's one that's fun to talk about, and I can't really explain why. No, I think I can, because it's two train wrecks fighting. Rashad Coulter, 8,400, taking on Hu Yao Zhang at 7,800. The line on this fight, Rashad Coulter -110, Yao Zhang +100. This fight, by the way, is at light heavyweight. Does not go to decision, -425. GPP fight doesn't take an expert to tell you that. Which side are you guys on personally? Give me Hu Yao Zhang. I think Rashad Coulter is hot, hot garbage. He got beat by Chris De La Roca and Chase Sherman, who we know is Joe's favorite fighter. Hugh Yazong, I get he's not very good, but he's – I can't actually pin down where he's doing camp. I've heard Team Alpha Male. I heard Jackson for a little bit.
He split the time on this latest camp.
Yeah, so he's getting decent training wherever he is. He's not in a no-name gym in China. He did lose to Sarah Lasker last time out, who is god-awful as well. So this is two bad fighters going against each other. They stand and trade. I'm going to give it to – Hugh Yaozong, he's also cheaper. I got a little bit of odds value. Look, this is a don't get cute spot. It's the best way to describe it. Play this fight a ton in GPPs. They're mid-range. Whichever guy you like more, play a little more. There's no wrong answer here. Do not play this fight in cash unless you want to go crazy and do a double stack. I guess you could double stack this fight because this fight should finish. And Chris De La Roca, Rashad Coulter, had tons of fights. The one thing I will say about Rashad Coulter, he has not been in a boring UFC fight. Goes forward, trades. That's all I could say about him, really. And is showing some decent toughness while he's getting the shit kicked out of him. So give me Hugh Yaozong, but this is your classic GPP fight. Chris?
Yeah, I'm also struggling to pin something down for Hugh Yaozong. I'm struggling to pin down what he does well. And I mean that sincerely. I don't know.
But what does Coulter do well? It's
Coulter,
crazy.
Coulter is at least a decent boxer. He can throw his hands in combination. If you look at Rashad Coulter, he hasn't been really touched up on the feet. He lost to Chase Sherman because of leg kicks, and he lost to De La Roche because of grappling. Does he get hit?
That fight against Sherman was short notice.
It was, yeah. Does he get touched up a little bit? Sure. But the thing about that De La Roche fight is De La Roche is one of the toughest dudes in the UFC. I mean, I don't know how much longer he's going to be in the UFC, but every fight of his, it's just he gets wailed on. And that was the Homer Simpson. That was the Homer Simpson that we always talk about. He gets wailed on. The opponent gets tired. And the other thing is, because I didn't remember this before I rewatched the fight, but Coulter did actually have to withstand some grappling early in that fight before he gassed out. So Hu Yuzhang, I don't think is going to do that. The one thing about Hu Yuzhang that I really dislike is he doesn't respond well to pressure at all. Even in his regional fights, he just backs straight up and goes into the cage. And I think Coulter's going to be able to tee off on him there. And the other thing about him is I don't think he has any power. I haven't seen any power from him at all, and it just makes me nervous. Like, he's not a grappler, he doesn't have any discernible power that I can see. He threw a couple of leg kicks when, for as long as that fight was on the feet who was it? You just said it.
Sarah Lasker.
Yeah. So I guess if you're trying to look for an angle, Coulter's had trouble with leg kicks, but. I just can't trust Hu Yuzhang because at least I know that Coulter's going to stand there and throw in combination and throw heavy. I don't know what Yozong's going to do. So I'm going with Rashad Coulter pretty heavy.
Joe?
Lord help me. But yeah, I have to. I mean, look, this guy has fought nobody. Yes, it's a good sign that he's doing camps in the U.S. He looked horrible against Cyril Asker. I think the combined wins of people he's fought is one or something ridiculous like that. I've got to give Coulter another shot here. Trains it at AKA. And the other narrative on this fight is that this fight is happening at light heavyweight, and Rashad Coulter actually missed weight. It's the only fighter who missed weight. He weighed in at 208. So he's forfeiting 20% of his purse. And the fight will go on, but this is a light heavyweight fight, not a heavyweight fight. So I'm not sure what that means, if it's going to mean his hand speed is better. I don't know how hard he, pushed to make weight. 2 pounds at that weight is not a lot, but it'll be interesting. I'm kind of like got a morbid curiosity about this fight. I am on Coulter. I'll have a few shares of the underdog just in case, but I've got to go with Coulter here for the finish.
Okay, moving on. We have another women's fight. Oh, good. Joe gets to start. Laura Mueller, 9,200, taking on Wu Yanan at 7,000. Mueller is the favorite at minus 380. Yanan plus 340. Yanan lost to Gina Mazzani last time out, or in her UFC debut, and I'm just going to leave that out there. She lost to Gina Mazzani. Laura Mueller beat Shayna Dobson last time out, a couple takedowns. I like what I see from her. 9,200, again, is the bigger issue with the price tag. I think overall she's just going to be able to mix it up better. If Mazzani got down Yanan, I don't doubt Mueller can. I just don't know how highly she's going to score. Of everyone up in that range, just because of the grappling, she's the one I'm most willing to play of those female fighters, priced 9,000 and under and over. But it's not a ringing endorsement. She's only 5-0. Her only wins in the UFC is over Shayna Dobson. Give me Mueller and another fight that I think the line is crazy, but she's a parlay piece in betting if you want to do that. I did do that, actually. I put Laura Mueller in because I'm relatively confident she wins. Scoring-wise, again, we have another issue. Joe?
Yeah, you stole a bit of my thunder there, but that's good that we see this the same way. If there was one of those high-priced female fighters that has the best chance for the finish, I would say Mueller would. What'd they say on the Dogger Pass podcast with our good friends Paul and Cody? Friends don't let friends bet on fighters that lost to Gina Mazzani, which is not a good sign. This should be a layup for Mueller, which tells me that the UFC likes her. So again, I will have a few shares of her to get the finish. I think she is extremely safe in cash, although her price is very high. So I haven't decided how much cash I'm playing this week, but I definitely like Mueller here.
Chris?
Yeah, I'm going to have to make this unanimous, and for a lot of the same reasons. I like a lot of what I've seen from Laura Mueller. I love the way that she swarms. I think she's good defensively. I think she can mix it up in her combinations. I think she can go for takedowns and grapple. And her opponent gets hit a lot, and that's a good thing. Now, she's really, really tough. I mean, even in that fight with Mazzani, her shoulder popped out of her socket. They popped it back in. She kept fighting. She's really tough. So that may make it harder to reach that value, but I just see her dominating pretty much everywhere. And I also think that she's showed a lot of toughness herself. I mean, Shayna Dobson hits really hard. Hits a lot harder than this opponent is going to. And I just love her to stay in there. And I think that she's better everywhere. And I think she can look. I don't think an overwhelming volume finish is out of the question here. So I'm going to go Mueller, and this is going to be one of my contrarian GPP plays because I think a lot of people are going to skip it. I will not be skipping it.
All right. Song Kinan, 8,300, taking on Alex Morono at 7,900. Song is still the favorite, but it's closing minus 115. Morono is the underdog at plus 105. True pick and fight here. I think this is probably the most, as the line would indicate, the most competitive fight in the cards, the one I've had the hardest time picking. But Morono, 1-3 in his last four. That one win, Joshua Berkman, good for you. Not good form. Lost to Jordan Mean last time out. Whereas Song Kinan is 2-0 in the UFC, two knockouts, but Bobby Nash, Hector Aldana. So hits hard, but against Aldana, he was clearly losing the first round, and Bobby Nash is super chinny. That's what Bobby Nash does. I think this fight is going to be, just based on their pricing and the output, I'm thinking is going to be in a Morono fight and Kinan at home. I think this is a better GPP fight than cash. Personally, I think it's a weird spot. I'm having a hard time picking this one. Ultimately, I'm leaning on Song for some of the intangibles. I think he's more likely to get a finish. And in a decision, he's at home, probably more volume. And I really am having the biggest thing keeping me from picking Morono is the performance against Jordan Mean. I know Song Kinan is young and an up and comer, and Jordan Mean's a vet who's been around. 1-3 in your last four, Joshua Berkman being the win. Now you're going to China. I'm going to lean towards Song Kinam, but I will have shares of both of these guys in GPPs. Chris, start us off.
Yeah, this seems like a pretty good matchup for Song Kinam for the reason that Morono's striking is basically really big looping overhands, and Kinam is a powerful counter-striker. Actually, we've seen both of his wins finished by counter-strikes and single-shot counter-strikes. So that's got to really up your confidence if you're thinking about playing Kinam here. The problem is that if he doesn't get that kill shot, his output is very low, and Morono's going to be the one pressuring and coming forward all fight. Also, I don't expect him to wrestle the way that Jordan Mean did. So I think this is going to be maybe a good GPP spot for Kinam. But I could also see Morono just outworking him and out-pressuring him to get a three-round decision. The way Morono leaves himself open, I really think that a finish is more likely than not here. But you're kind of banking on it if you're going Kinam. Ultimately, I'm going to pick him to win the fight. But I do think you should have shares of both just in case Morono's just pressure and aggressiveness gets it done.
Joe?
Yeah. I guess there's a little bit of line value in Morono here. You know, it's what, pretty close to even, right? I don't know if you have the odds up.
So it's -110 to +100.
Okay, so that's as close to even as you're going to get. You know, 7.9K, there's a little bit of odds value here. This is kind of interesting. I mean, I just I don't know really what to do here. I heard that, you know, Morono is doing some time at Fortis, which is good. Although I heard on another podcast that he's really only spending 2 days a week there. So, you know, is that really going to make that big a difference? I guess I'll go with the Chinese fighter here. Although, if you're going to target this fight, I would recommend balancing it out because it's not a really strong endorsement.
All right, let's move on. We have Li Jingliang, 8,500, taking on David Zawada at 7,700. Jingliang is the favorite, -185. The comeback on Zawada is +170. Li Jingliang is coming off the fight where he tried to blind Jake Matthews. Oh, no, that was two fights ago. He also had a decision win last time out against Daichi Abe. You know what you're going to get with Jingliang? Pressure guy comes forward, throws hard. Didn't get a finish of Abe, but he landed plenty of hard strikes in that fight. Typically looks to get a finish, whereas David Zawada, I think, pulled the win over Danny Hotchock Roberts last time out. And it should have been a great I told you so moment for me to the MMA universe because I was on Zawada all week and I was told I was crazy. But he got takedowns, you know, tough guy from KSW. The issue is I think Jake Matthews is a better grappler than David Zawada. I think people are – I've seen people picking Zawada, at least some people, and – relating that if Matthews can get down Jingliang, that's what Zawada can do. I'm not sure Zawada can. Danny Hotchock Roberts is terrible takedown defense, in my opinion. Whereas, you know, it's just a different level here. Jingliang, I think, will be able to stop the takedowns and be okay against Zawada on the feet. By the way, this fight, really interesting, is expected to go to decision. -150 goes to decision. I thought that would have been a little bit lower. For me, I think Li Jingliang, especially in China, I think he's the better fighter here. I would love to go back to the well with David Zawada, but I think everyone is coming onto the hype train that I helped build with my I Told You So's, and I'm jumping off here. I think Li Jingliang is better, especially in GPPs. If there's going to be a finish, it should be the Leech. So give me him at 8,500. Joe, start us off.
Yeah. You know, this is probably the most popular of all the Chinese fighters. He was actually briefly cut by the UFC. I don't know if people realize this. The other thing is there is a small amount of narrative aside from being probably the most popular fighter, and that does the UFC actually, in that they are building up, they're putting a PI in China, and do they really want the most popular Chinese fighter to lose? That's a big part of the narrative. There's that, and then, you know... First of all, I don't see this going to decision. I see this going inside the distance. And the other part of the narrative is I don't believe that Lee has got a win against a fighter with a winning record in the UFC. I believe I saw that tweeted out a few days ago by Dudas, Clay Davis, that he does not have a fight against – he does not have a win against a fighter with a winning record in the UFC, which is kind of interesting. I mean, did not, look great against Matthews. I guess because of the narrative, I'm going to pick Lee, but I would say why not have a few shares of Zawada? I mean, but I've kind of was on Zawada big earlier in the week, and then as I kind of understood the narrative, I moved a little bit off him. I will have a few shares of him, but I'm kind of leaning now more towards Lee, so I will pick Lee. But I would not be surprised if this turns into a slugfest. If Lee gets hurt early and has to kind of rally to come back, would not surprise me at all.
Chris, how about for you?
Yeah, first of all, welcome to my world with the Kurt Holaba. Knocks down what's his face and then loses by decision.
By Shane Burgos. Shane Burgos armbarred him.
I know. That's what I meant to say. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. But
I got robbed by the friggin' judges.
Yeah, but I was still so close to. But the universe does what it wants most of the time. So I am going to pick Zawada, and not because of any kind of grappling advantage or perceived grappling advantage. I think Zawada may be the better kickboxer, and I think that that's going to play here. I think Zawada is going to be quicker, and you alluded to it, Sean. You know what you're going to get from Li Jinglong. He's very predictable in his combinations, overhand right, left hook, repeat as necessary while pressuring, which is fine. I mean, he did put a little wrinkle in. He added a nice hard leg kick in that fight with Abe. He used it a lot. He used it to good effect. I still think that Zawada has enough on the feet to get it done. I like his in and out movement. I think that, we all know Danny Roberts has very fast hands. Roberts had trouble catching him on the feet. I hope he doesn't grapple, quite honestly, unless he needs to, unless he gets hurt or something, because I really think he can do this on the feet, and I wouldn't want him to get into a scrambling match. Because, as you said, he lost most of those against Roberts. So, yeah, I mean, I really think Lee is going to be the favorite here because everybody likes him, his knockout potential. I mean, I meant the public darling. Because everybody likes his knockout potential, but I really see Zawada with a lot of advantages here. And I'm taking him to get a nice decision, win as a dog, and possibly a finish.
Agree to disagree on that one, but I get it. You're hurting for dogs. I think they're a better spot personally, but that would be a good hot take for you. I would let you have Zawada by finish the hot take against Li Jingliang in China.
Well, just bank it away because I have another hot take, so I'll have two unofficially.
All right. Song Yadong at 9,100 taking on Vince Morales at 7,100. Song Yadong is the favorite. Of course, I'm on Best Fight Odds. Minus 500. Vincent Morales, the comeback, is plus 435. Song Yadong, two UFC finishes. Not good opponents either. Felipe Aranches and Baharat Kandare. Over 100 both times, but Vincent Morales is no great shakes either. Song, the Terminator Yadong, I think gets another finish here. I won't go too adept into this one. I just think he's better than Vince Morales fighting at home. I like the narrative here, as Joe would say. Chris, we'll start with you.
My problem with Vince Morales is, he tends to rely a bit too much on his athleticism. He's a good in and out fighter. He likes to pressure. He likes to use his hand speed, and that all works great. And even in his contender series fight, he was about, three punches away from stopping it until he lost by sub in the next round. But I just think Kanaan is the better technical boxer, the better technical striker. I think he's better defensively. I think, like when I said that he likes Morales likes to rely on his athleticism, it tends to get him in pocket battles striking because he thinks that he can just outwork his opponent. But I think the more technical fighter, as we've seen in fights past, is going to have an advantage there. And I just think that Morales is a little too green. I think his technique is a little bit lacking. So I'm going to pick Kanaan here to maybe, you know, hit him with a hard counter or, you know, really take advantage of some of Morales' striking in the pocket.
Joe, how about for you?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, big narrative on this card. You know, this is probably the second most popular fighter among the Chinese fighters. UFC likes what they see. You know, this, we don't really know how old this kid is. You know, he is 19 and he hasn't aged. But I like him here. Morales is not bad. I mean, I think he took a fight in Bellator, kind of a weird trajectory to the UFC was, you know, I believe he did not win on the Contender Series and then took one fight in Bellator and now he's back. He's not awful. This is probably the best of the three fighters that he is, that, you know, that the favorite is faced here. But I will stay with the favorite here. And I think this is a fight to target the favorite in. I'm not going to say it's a free square because I don't know if there are any free squares on this card, but I like him quite a bit.
All right. Next up, our co-main event, Sergey Pavlovich, 8,200, taking on Alistair Overeem at 8,000. Pavlovich is the favorite, minus 120, taking on Overeem at plus 110. Look, Overeem, I didn't see a ton of weigh-in videos today. I saw Overeem on the scales. That dude looks in shape. He looks like he is
back. When hasn't he, though? When hasn't Overeem?
He looks like he's up another notch again, though. He fluctuates a little bit, in my opinion. I think he's back on some supplements. Let's just put it that way. Pavlovich, on the other hand, didn't look great on the scales. Look, stand-up battle, not a ton of volume. They are heavyweights. They're priced right in the middle. I'm having a hard time deciding which way to go just in terms of exposure to this fight because we've seen multiple times Overeem. You know, everyone wants to target heavyweights and GPPs. We've seen Overeem a ton of times burn that strategy just because he ends up in the third round in these, you know, friggin' awful fights. We saw it against Verdum. We saw it against Mark Hunt. Saw it against, there's one more, Roy Nelson. But last, you know, he's on a 2-fight losing streak, been knocked out each of his last 2 fights. The one against Curtis Blaydes was vicious. That was ground and pound, though, versus the one hitter against Ngannou. Anybody heavyweight has power to put you down, and Overeem is super chinny. That being said, I still like Overeem here, and I think people are going to be off of him. I think people are, you know, doubting him as what tends to happen. Look, Pavlovich is not a Blaydes or Ngannou. Give me Overeem to pull an upset here at 8,000. Joe?
Okay, so there's a fair amount of narrative on this fight. First of all, Overeem is probably gonna be paid more than the rest of the fighters on the card combined. That's the kind of deal he has. Okay. Maybe not without respect to Ngannou. I mean, Ngannou might have a decent deal, but no, actually, Overeem makes a multiple of what Ngannou makes. So, first of all, I didn't see that the Russian looked that bad on the scales. I thought he looked fine. I've never seen Overeem not be in shape, even when when flying against Ngannou, he looked good. He's just one of those guys that takes pride in how he looks. The Russian trains he's trained by Khabib's father. He's in that camp. He's a very methodical guy. So this could be a really boring fight because, you know, we've all seen the Reem Verdum fight, which was like nails on the blackboard boring. This could be another boring fight. This guy's very methodical. He's got a good wrestling base. So this fight is a risk to target just for that very reason. However, you know, if the Russian gets him down, if he finds Reem's chin, it's pretty much even DraftKings pricing-wise, 8.2K, 8,000. I really do think that the UFC wants to find an excuse to cut Overeem or bring him back at a much, much more favorable rate because of how much money he makes. So I am going to take the Russian here.
Chris, how about for you?
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm just not a big fan of these dudes coming over from Fight Nights Global I think a lot of them are overrated. If you look at Thiago Alves' last fight against who was that? Alexei Kunchenko, and he was supposed to be this huge guy coming in. I think 18-0 undefeated. He didn't look great to me in tape, and he didn't look great to me in that fight. I actually thought Alves pulled that out, but here and there, our new guy Pavlovich is you know, a big heavy thrower. He's got a nice wrestling base, as Joe mentioned, but he's kind of a plotter. Doesn't have good footwork. He just sort of pressures you in one spot and looks to throw bombs until you go down. Now, that's always a worry when we're dealing with Overeem because, you know, Overeem is like one of the few guys where I actually worry about his chin. I tend to think there's too much pro-clutching about chins in MMA, but Overeem is one that I do happen to agree with. I do worry about his chin. So I think that if he catches him, that's obviously a problem. He can win by knockout for sure. But I think Overeem can use his movement here too. Like I said, Pavlovich is a plotter. I think Overeem is going to have a great speed advantage. And if he could keep this on the outside and use his movement, then yeah, he could probably hit him hard with something and change the course of the fight. As far as the pick, it's so tough for me to pick Overeem in a fight these days. I'm gonna pick Pavlovich and be pleasantly surprised if it's Overeem. But I will say have both of these because I could see either one of these guys finishing.
All right, main event time: Curtis Blaydes, 8,700, taking on Francis Ngannou, 7,500. Curtis Blaydes is the favorite, -235. Ngannou +215. Remember, just a little while ago, when Francis Ngannou was on top of the world, he's the next big thing. Hits harder than a Ford Escort. Well, now he's a 2-1 dog against Curtis Blaydes, a guy he's already beat. That being said, give me Curtis Blaydes. I think he's better than he was then. I think takedowns, clearly Ngannou's not going to learn how to stop a takedown that quick. I know he's a physical freak athlete. I don't think it's enough here. Curtis Blaydes is the pick at -235. I think he gets takedowns, gets a finish. I will have some shares of Francis Ngannou because if he finishes, it is by vicious KO. We've seen Curtis Blaydes was hurt in the fight against Mark Hunt. He was wobbled in the chop fight takedown and got it. He can be knocked out. The knockout against Blaydes first time was a TKO. That being said, perfect GPP fight. Stack it in cash, I think, is fine on this wonky card.
Why? Why is it fine to stack this fight in cash?
Why?
Yeah.
Because there's not a ton of dogs that I love. And Ngannou is live to a win. You'll be overweight to the field. Who in that range am I dying to get in?
Well, I mean, I guess my question is this. What if there's a repeat of the Lewis fight where he throws three significant strikes, I mean, and just plays defense all day? I mean, that's my only concern.
I can get my four wins or my three other wins elsewhere. I could be giving up a loss, but anywhere in that major, I'm not going to try and get an Alex Morono. And just, you know, I could lose both of them. I could, you know, Ngannou wins, Morono loses.
Everybody said this fight is stackable in cash. I think I'm the only one who thinks there's a huge amount of risk. I'd rather go with Kondo or Aguilar and pay out and use that extra money.
You can do that and then get three more favorable wins, I think, is the strategy. I'm not playing a ton of cash personally, but I think that's the way you would stack. Hunt way down. And then plug in your three fighters for around your 9,000 a pop or whatever you have left. That's the way I think I would approach. You know, you could approach cash. And I probably will. I haven't built yet. I got to get on that relatively soon. But Blaydes is the pick here. I'm going to have way more of him than Ngannou. It's also for that reason too, Joe. I think I'm going to have way more Blaydes, and I'll push to back myself up in cash with Ngannou. But Blaydes is the pick here. For sure, and God, I would love to see Blaydes versus DC, but I don't think we're ever going to get to see that fight. Chris, start us off.
Yeah, you know, this is weird. The first thing you obviously have to talk about is, you know, the is Ngannou shot narrative. I know the narrative is usually Joe's bag. I'm going to beat you to it this time because you just can't avoid it when you're talking about this. I think it was. I mean, that might have something to do with it. But I think we're all kind of forgetting that Ngannou is a counter striker anyway. He's always been a counter striker. And so if you're a guy like Derek Lewis, who's just never going to lead, who doesn't really lead that much anyway, but with the back thing, he really couldn't lead. You know, you're going to get a fight that kind of looks like that. That's not, honestly, that's not souring me on Ngannou the whole way here. Because I'll tell you something, when you go back and you look at Blades' last two fights, and even the fight with Ngannou, the first one, he has trouble finding his range on the feet. He falls short quite a bit. Hunt was able to counter him and almost take his life with an overhand right. Now, he's a very tough guy, and we've seen that in his fights, but the only reason we know that is because he's been rocked by Ngannou. He's been rocked by Mark Hunt. He's been rocked by Alistair Overeem. So, you know, at this point, it's like you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, when is the time where he gets rocked, where he doesn't come back from it? And Ngannou was rocking him with almost every shot in that fight. Straight lefts, he was rocking him. And Blades is going to be a much more willing striker, to his own detriment, I think, than a guy like Derek Lewis was. So when you're looking at this fight, I think the main question you have to ask yourself is, how long will Blades try to keep this on the feet? I think Blades should be trying to get his wrestling working immediately. But having said that, I don't think Ngannou's wrestling defense is terrible. I think that Stipe shot a lot of blast doubles. And Ngannou's wrestling, at least at that time, was very much more push you back to the fence, try to take you down. And Ngannou was doing a lot of the right things. He was digging for underhooks. He was trying to frame away. So I think he at least has the basics of wrestling defense down. Now, when he gets there, when he gets to the floor, that's a whole other story, because he doesn't really show that many signs of being able to get up. And I do think it's fair to say that Blades has improved his top control since then. But if you're looking past Ngannou, I really think that's a misstep. I think that Blades tried to lead with his wrestling more last time, I think because maybe he knows his striking is deficient, caught that knee from Overeem, almost got knocked out again. I just think it's a super dangerous fight for Curtis Blades again. And can Blades take him down and control him? Yeah, but I think he needs to do that. And I still think he's going to be in danger when it's on the feet. So, look, I think Ngannou is perfectly live here. I think you should go about even, if I'm being honest, because I think either guy could end this fight.
Mm. Well, the even narrative is actually a hot take. I just don't know. There's such a big question mark about whether Ngannou has got his head right. I was so discouraged after that fight that I almost stepped away. I was going to step away for a couple of weeks. I was in Vegas. I saw that fight. There was like a VIP party at Red Rock. I saw that fight, and I was so discouraged. I actually lost a seat. I was in a tiebreaker for a bracket challenge ticket with Dr. Pimple Popper, and he essentially conceded because I had Ngannou left and he was done, and it was just so discouraging. So I don't know if he's got his head right. I mean, I do agree that you shouldn't fade him, although I think if you are playing three primary lineups and you put Ngannou in more than one, then you are just like, you might be living with a lot of dead money. So I would certainly say a percentage, but half I think is way too much. And I am obviously picking Blades to win here.
All right. That's the fight by fake fight breakdown for UFC Beijing. Let's do hot takes. Chris, hot take.
Okay, so my hot take is going to be a little different than the ones I usually do. Usually I target a fight. But this week I see a lot of dogs are in play, as I mentioned. So my hot take is going to be that at least $1,000 is going to be left on the table for the optimal lineup.
Wow.
Okay. That's definitely a hot take. Joe, you got one?
Yeah, I say that there will be at least two Chinese fighters who are favorites that will lose.
All right. That's an interesting one. You know what? I'm going to go Lauren Muller wins by first round TKO.
Nice.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah. Nice. Same page.
All right. Now, guys, you know we have two cards next week, right?
Yes, that's true. Yes.
So we gotta get back to the millions of viewers and determine how we're gonna handle that.
So make sure you follow all of us. If you follow us, all of us on Twitter, I think is the best way to do it before we decide right now.
Yeah. Do we do a mega show? Do we do a mega show and just knock out both cards, or what do we do?
I was just gonna say, remember what we did last time where we had quick picks for the fight for the tough, and then
Yeah,
I think that works good. I don't
know. Maybe that's the way to do it. Maybe just expand the show to a little longer and just do that quick picks.
I would assume Thursday night, but follow all of us on Twitter and you will see when Fight IQ will be going live next week, or just subscribe on iTunes and get pushed right to your phone.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Again, make sure I mentioned RotoWire. Thanks for having us. As always, I got my holiday gift. Thank you, RotoWire. RotoWire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all their paid content. No credit card required. It is at Real Chris Olsen, at Sun Tzu, at the DFS Sniper with 1S. Guys, good luck in your contest. Make sure to either set an alarm or play light. And we will see you next week.
Got it.
Thanks, everybody.
Take care.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.